Start. All right. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning for the whole board meeting. I'm Terry Hollingsworth, chair of the Orange County Workforce Development Board. We are still waiting for a few board members to show up, so we're going to move the agenda around a bit. I want to respect your time, and so why don't we go ahead and get started with the Pledge of Allegiance. So everyone, please stand up. The flag is there. Right hand over your heart. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. Thank you so much. Let's see, should we hold off on the board member roll call at this point, or
She can still take the board member, and then if someone else comes in, she can.
All right.
Gloria Alvarado?
Here.
Jesse Benron? Kathy Boyd? Rob Claudio? Steve Curiel? Mike Daniel? Laurie Hollingsworth.
Here.
Terry Hollingsworth.
Here.
Chris Wharton.
Here.
Trung Lee.
Here.
John Luker.
Here.
Annalisa Liu. Present. Doug Mangione. Barbara Mason. Carlos Oregon.
Here.
Mike Rain. And Todd Swell. We do not have
one. Okay.
We need one more.
Yeah, one more. Okay, got it. All right. So we'll continue along with the plan to move the agenda around a bit. Public comments.
There's no public comment, I would say.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. All right. So we are going to now drop down to the information items. And hopefully by that time, by the time we complete the information items, we'll have a forum. So why don't we begin with the Business Services Committee?
Okay, that'll be me. Hi, yeah. Everyone. I'm Annalisa Lee, chair of the Business Services Committee, and I'll try to drive you on a little bit. We had a meeting earlier this month. Thank you to everyone who attended, and there was an announcement from staff in order to how we're transitioning, and also we reviewed data regarding job fairs. There's a lot of good feedback from the committee relative to job fairs, continued increase in engagement. Also, there were reports regarding phone calls that were made, et cetera. So we went through the usual data. And there was also feedback from committee members about how we might be able to refresh the agenda and the information, the data that gets sent back out to the committee. So I know that we have one staff member, maybe two. We had a second person, Marianne, who joined the business services team not too long ago to handle the rapid response side of the business. And we still have Elizabeth Hoy, who has been really wonderful in getting the word out and letting businesses and community members know about the services, business services, but also the board in general. I share that anecdotally. I know that because I've had people in the community at different meetings mention the Workforce Development Board just out of the blue in conversations. So that's a good anecdote. So those are the key and high hard updates. Are there any questions, comments, thoughts from the community members who are there?
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Annalisa. Next, the Youth Committee.
This is John Luker, the chair of the Youth Committee, and we met last month. Not a lot to report. We did, basically we went through the finances. One of the issues that we have is it's difficult to kind of track the finances because everything was very far behind in terms of processing, which I think is one of the reasons we're going to be looking at number 5 as an action item to kind of look at that and see if we can get the invoices processed more quickly and efficiently so that we can actually see more current information. We also looked at the results in terms of performance, in terms of getting youth through our different programs, which continues to be a significant challenge. I think part of that is due to kind of our spots where we have the opportunity for youth to engage, which we We're hoping that the new facility will be able to accommodate that. So that's about all that we talked about. Anything else, Carlos, that you were there as well? Anything?
No, sir, that's it.
Yep.
Any questions? All right. And then our final information item, EDD compliance audit updates.
Monica, you know, 152. So no change really since the last full board meeting. We are currently doing our internal with our contracts monitoring team for last fiscal year, the 21-22. The top five items are still ongoing. They've been ongoing for the top three have been ongoing for a while. The bottom two are the most recent as far as the Riola Section 188 desk reviews is currently ongoing. The EDD RPR 4.0 monitoring is new. The previous ones have been ongoing and we have waiting for feedback from EDD in sense of those. There's also a list of all the complete ones below. There's nothing new to report.
Any questions?
Give us an update. We're waiting for some responses, correct?
Yeah, so basically the three items which are ongoing, they remain ongoing. So we provided everything we needed to the state. We're just waiting to hear back from them. So this really just get that way for a little while. So there really is no status update. It's kind of like we provided what we need to provide and we're waiting to hear next steps.
All right, it looks like we have one at this point.
All right. I think the roll call.
Oh.
Rob Claudio?
Here.
Doug Mangiani?
Here.
Mike Crane?
Here.
We have one up. Great, thank you. All right, so now we're going to go up to the action items, invoice policy.
I'll take that one.
Okay.
Go to page 12, please, Monica. So we're looking to revise, we're looking for the board's approval to update the invoice policy. As John mentioned, we've been running into some issues with the cleared check portion of the policy. Currently, we require our providers to submit payment once it's actually cleared and the cost has been incurred. So what's happening in situations is we're making, say, supportive services payments to program participants, they're not cashing the check for a couple months, and then by the time the banking and accounting gets, the provider's not able to receive to us for 2-3 months, which means we're getting a lot of supplemental invoices. It means that when we're reporting our invoicing, it's very delayed. We're not, basically right now we're processing invoices for December for some of our providers, as opposed to being March, April. So it's really putting us behind. So what we're looking to do here is update the language to remove the cost incurred element, just that the expense has been made. So that way when they can submit checks that have been issued instead of checks that have been cleared. It's going to speed up the process quite a bit. We are adding a little bit of language in there at the policy as well, where if the check does not clear within 90 days, those funds need to be returned. So that way we don't have issues where maybe a payment's made and it's never actually gets deposited. So that way the providers aren't able to enrich themselves with the program funds. So I think addressing that issue is gonna really kind of expedite the process. It's gonna make the, not only our provider's job a lot easier when it comes to invoicing on the county's end as well, when reviewing these invoices, it's gonna be, we're only gonna be reviewing one invoice instead of multiple supplemental invoices. It's gonna make the whole process a lot quicker. And from like a policy procedure, we do a full invoice review. We're not required to. We could do an abbreviated high level if we wanted to, but we're choosing to do a more comprehensive review of invoicing. We're just looking to kind of simplify the cost of the piece.
I didn't have a question on policy. I was just wondering, once this is done, do we track payment timing? One of the issues a lot of vendors have with county is the amount of time it takes to get paid, and so that in essence they're cash flowing. So is there a metric that gets reported up? I know the auditor controllers are sign off on the actual disbursement.
Yeah, so if once we've got receive an invoice at full order, like everything's correct, with no mistakes, and we have 30 days for our whole process to be able to review, process, and submit payments.
But if there's something missing, do you send it back to start, or do you just debit it?
No, so if it's incomplete, maybe there's an error made or a miscalculation or something like that, we submit it back to the provider. The provider then has to address the issue and then resubmit, and the clock does start over. So it's when they submit a correct full invoice that the clock starts. And that's where kind of fixing this piece is going to help a little bit too, because it's going to allow them to submit a correct full work right away and not have to do supplementals on the back end. So hopefully going to speed up the payment process.
Okay.
Francis, I appreciate the policy recommendation and the intention behind it, and I get it, sometimes people don't want to it. I'm wondering though, if there might be a way for, once a check is written, is there something that the client can then sign off on as well at the same time, or right about the same time, so that even if it's not cashed for some time, there is that additional level of information showing yes, this check indeed was given to.
Yeah, so we do have that. So when we make supported services, it has to be approved. We have a form showing what the payment was for. So it's not like we're just collecting the checks. We know exactly what every payment's for. We know what participant it's going to or what expense it's going to. So yeah, we do have full records of everything. It's just sometimes what's happening is about, wasn't it, by the way?
Okay. But in that scenario or in that form, there's nothing from the client that sort of lets you know that yes, indeed, I got this check.
Oh, they sign for it. Yeah.
Oh, they do sign.
When they receive support.
That's what I was asking. Okay.
Do they get a notice in advance saying that, okay, this is coming?
It depends on what it's for. You know, so it could be for maybe it's to pay for some expenses related to the class they're taking in schooling. So we're just going to be paying for that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I'll itemize what the payments are for. Yeah.
Any other questions? Is there a motion to approve this policy?
So
all in agreement say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposition? Okay. Motion approved. Next we have the program years 2021 to 2024 Orange County Workforce Development Board local plan and Orange Regional Plan biennial modifications. So, is that you, David?
It is I for a presentation. I didn't know, Francis, does staff have any opening remarks? You want me just to proceed with the presentation? All me, all the time. Well, that's not me. That has my other PowerPoint.
Sorry.
That's my good friend, Bob. I'm just queuing you up, Bob. All right. Well, good morning, everyone. And thank you for having me. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. And a number of you have been quite active in the development of our biennial modification to our local plan. So Terry, Annalisa, Rob, Carlos, others of you have participated in sessions where we've actually worked on this. So I'm going to give you in the short 5 to 10 minutes, a primer on workforce plans, and then zero into the specifics of our regional and local plan and what we've done with respect to this modification. So we're not today addressing the approval of the plan. You actually have a governor approved regional plan and local plan in place. But pursuant to our legislation, WIOA, we have to at the midpoint, it's a 4-year plan, at the midpoint, produce a 2-year update, hence biennial modification. So that's what we're here to do today. So let's take a look for a minute at our required plan. So here's your primer on this. So under WIOA, we've got three types of plans. We had statewide plans and local plans for about the last 40 years over the course of a variety of federal legislation from the Job Training Partnership back to the Workforce Investment Act, and now our current federal legislation, Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, WIOA. So state and local plans have been with us for 4 decades, ever since Orange County started operating as its own workforce area, and when your predecessor board, the PIC, was established back in 1983. We've had plans since then. What we got with WIOA is is that we now have, we have a statute and implemented regulations do prescribe the content for state, regional, and local plans. But what I wanted to introduce in just a moment is this new plan. Well, there it is at the top. WEOA, the regional plans, at the implementation of WEOA, governors had the option of forming, in addition to our local workforce areas, like your local board, regions. And in California, where we landed ultimately, is among our 45 local boards, we have 15 regions. Your region is one that has the exact same boundaries as the County of Orange. I'll dig into that in just a moment. Did want to point out that it is the State Employment Development Department organization Rob works for and the California Workforce Development Board that issue joint guidance on the regional and local plan. So how we develop them. Yes, the rules are embedded in the federal law, but they issue guidance at the state level. And then acting on behalf of the governor, EDD, and the state board, review and approve those plans. Our final date, we've already submitted them for review without signature, but following your approval and that of the Board of Supervisors, we'll then submit the signed plans by, as soon as we can. And then by June 30th, the state must tell us your plan is reviewed and approved or it is not. We have every expectation it will be approved. So here's the purpose and key content of the three plans. So the state plan, without reading, this is really the overarching document. It is the document that really creates a blueprint for the delivery of workforce development services throughout California and how those align with other systems such as economic development, education, social services, really create this ecosystem for the delivery of workforce development across our great state. Now, the regional plan is the new plan. We never saw this in our past legislation. We had JTPA through the year 2000 and WEOA from basically 2000 to 2014. We had our state and local plans. But with the option of creating regions around workforce development, around economic development hubs, we have this requirement to create a regional plan. All of these plans are four-year action plans. They have a four-year shelf life, okay? And this is the four-year plan that says within the region, these are our strategic priorities with respect to industries. These are our strategic priorities with respect to special populations, populations most in need. And here are our career pathway strategies to connect workers to those key industries. That's really the key content of our regional plans. Now, our local plan is the plan where we talk, again, a four-year action plan, where we talk about operations, and there's really three areas to it. The local plan talks about partnerships, and it talks, well, two areas, partnerships and service delivery, a little bit too about staff development. So I wanted to point out with the last bullet here, that when we talk about the local and regional plans from the state's perspective, when we submit those, they're submitted as a package. So they don't get submitted separately. They're a package together and will receive approval together. Okay? Stop me with any questions. So moving on, just a little bit of information about the period covered by local plans, as I said, or by plans. The state, regional, and local plans, all a four-year plan. The cycle for the state plan is a little different. I want to point this out to you because you might ask yourself at some day, why are we always working on a local and regional plan? Well, the four-year cycle for the regional plan, the current cycle, is program year 20 through 23, and the state is currently crafting its new four-year plan for the new cycle. And then we follow that cycle. Our current four-year plan is program year 21 through 24, in effect, July 1 of 2021 through June 30th of 2025, because it's program year 24. And so we get guidance on developing the plan and developing its modification, usually about 18 months in advance. So we only ever get like a six-month breather between developing a plan or a modification. And then when we're not developing a plan, we're looking at the new state plan, which is running 1 year before us. So I know boards have that question. Why are you always putting a plan in front of us? Why are you always inviting us to planning meetings? It's just the cycle of the planning. Biennial modifications to all plans are required. That's what we're doing today. We have a governor's approved PY 21 through 24 plan in place. It's a valid plan, but we must, prior to July 1, 2023, which is the midway point, get our modification. What is the modification? It's really an update to make the plan more current, make it more relevant. As I've said to members of your workforce board before, often I think of these two-year updates to be rather academic, but not in this case, because when we developed the original regional and local plans for Orange County and the Orange region, it was right in the middle of the pandemic. So there was some actual change going on between the two plans. So moving forward, I want to take a look just quickly with you at the plans pertaining to Orange County. So as I said, there's a regional plan, and this plan deals primarily with sectors, populations, and career pathway strategies. Our region is comprised of three local boards. And as we know, within the boundaries of Orange County, there is a City of Anaheim board, there's a City of Santa Ana board, and then there's the Balance of County board, which is the board that, you oversee. And those boards comprise the region, or what we call the Orange Regional Planning Unit. And it is the responsibility of those three boards to come together and develop that regional plan. And I had the pleasure of working with your board, Santa Ana board, Anaheim board, and staff on that plan. Or rather the modification to that plan. And then while local plans are typically developed by individual boards, there should be 45 local plans in California. Well, there's one anomaly, and that's you. Some time ago, your region, the three local boards came together to the state and said, hey, what would you think if we developed a unified local plan among the three boards that talks about all the things local plans do, but just for the three boards instead of three plans? And the state said, if you can do a good job on that, yeah, that's fine. So we've been doing, this is like our third iteration of a unified local plan. So you would typically have an Anaheim plan, Santa Ana plan, Orange County local board plan. We have one unified local plan that represents the three board drop.
I just have to add, you know, for as long as I've been on all three of those boards and now just this one, it took us a lot to get there. Because I think, in particular for me, because I, you know, I participate in all three boards of my staff or in all the three, you know, workforce development areas. But like, why do I have to keep going to this three different planning meetings when we can just kind of try to put it together? And our region is not large geographically sense, but oh my goodness.
It is a model for efficiency. I think that the three boards of Orange County around that joint local plan can be quite proud, because as Rob points out, it really reduces redundancy and it forges alignment across the systems. It also gives us really clear points of comparison about, well, here are the modest differences among the strategies of the three boards. And when you look at those differences and you look at the similarities, there's lots of opportunity to say, well, you know, we might wanna do what they're doing because that's more efficient. It's, you know, saves time, it saves energy. So an interesting factoid about your plans. So,
Is this different from LA County? Do they not?
LA County is its own region. They produce across the seven boards of Orange County, Terry,
yes.
One regional plan, seven local plans.
Oh.
Yeah, and we used to submit them by paper, and I have somewhere on my phone, because I worked with that board a couple of cycles ago, the stacks of local plans we were boxing and sending this. Now we do it electronically. So it's very, yeah, but they produce their own local plans there, and every other region does as well.
Okay.
So I just wanted to give you a sense of where you have landed in terms of local plans since WIOA started. We started at you in 2014, and you developed a 2017 through 2020, a PY 2017 through 2020 regional plan. It's now inactive. But you then developed that modification back in 2019, inactive, because we completed that four-year cycle. Right now, you have an active PY 21 through 24 Orange RPU regional plan, and today we're asking for your review and approval of the modification, the biennial modification to that plan. Same thing on the local plan side.
For this four-year period, we had a four-year governor-approved plan. We got a biennial modification approved. We have a four-year active plan, and today we come to you with our local plan for your review and approval, just to give you some history of where we stand with these plans under WIOA. So required content of the regional plan, I gave you an overview a minute ago, but here's what we address in your regional plan. We provide an analytical overview of the region. That's really stats and analysis of economic data. Regional indicators, those are performance metrics, and we've chosen one. You'll see it when I do a quick review. How we drive demand-driven skill attainment, how we create opportunities for all Californians to enter middle-class occupations and receive self-sustaining wages, and then how we align and coordinate throughout the region. So that's really the content of the regional plan. On the local plan side, three pieces, basically. Section one, we talk about how we coordinate among the core and other required partners. The core partners under WIOA are Title I, that's a WIOA adult youth and dislocated worker. Title II, that's our adult, that's our Family Education and Literacy Act program. Title III is Wagner-Tizer, which Rob and his team very efficiently handle here. And Title IV is rehabilitation. The other programs are federally funded programs like Job Corps, Community Service Block Grant programs, the Title V of the Older Americans Act. So that's what that first section is about. Second section is about coordination with strategic California partner programs. These are things like child support services, things like the TANF SNAP ENT program, which we call CalFresh Employment Training in California. And then the last section is how we deliver Title I services. How do we get services out to adults and dislocated workers? How do we bring services to youth? So that's the content of the local plan. I just wanted to give you a quick overview here of what we did to develop these two-year modifications, okay? We had a two-day in-person planning session. It had WIB members, staff, partners. Rob was there, Terry was there, Annalisa was there for part of it. Where we just came together and we reviewed our current plan and we identified where updates and modifications to data, processes, et cetera, were needed. And then we had an all-day in-person community, or not an all-day, but we had an in-person community forum about the regional plan, an in-person community forum on the local plan. We then published both of those plans under a public 30-day comment period. And the last thing we're doing today and then moving forward is we're bringing the plans to your board first, and then the Board of Supervisors for approval. Do realize too that the Anaheim and Santa Ana boards are independently reviewing these plans as well. I'm sure Rob, you've seen them agendized. So with that, here's an overview of what we updated in the regional plan. First, we included an introduction section, which we didn't have before. The last time we looked at the plan, you just opened it and started answering questions. We thought, okay, our audience is the public. It's the residents of Orange County, business owners, job seekers, et cetera. So we should have an introduction section that gives some context. So that was a strategy to move forward the quality of the plan. We really spent a lot of time, and I want to acknowledge the work of Annette Kelly Whittle, your regional organizer, because she really dug deep working with Rob's staff or the EDD, LMID staff, Labor Market Information Division staff, on updating the statistical content of your regional plan. We selected a regional indicator, a qualitative metric, which is the region has processes to communicate industry workforce needs to supply side partners. We then described our new brand, the Orange County Workforce Alliance. Rather than just saying the region, we've developed this brand to identify the work we do together as the three boards. We described how we work with businesses in target sectors. We included some recommendations we gathered through our public forums. And then throughout the document, we updated facts and figures, and we revised descriptions to ensure they were suitable for a broad audience. Again, we reminded ourselves during this iteration of the plan that the audience for the plan is not the state reviewer. The audience for the plan is not the staff. The audience for the plan is everybody. It's everybody in Orange County, right? So we wanted to make it a more friendly, accessible document. I think we went, we made some progress there. Okay, in terms of the local plan, same sort of things, but let me point out a few things that came to fruition here. Again, we included an introduction this time to make it more readable and accessible. We updated the list of partners because the partners will change depending on who's managing at the local level, those older American Act programs or other programs. We included a section on local partnerships with organized labor, businesses, and community organizations. We got a comment from a member of the Santa Ana board who represents labor, and he said, I know it's not required, but why don't we include some narrative about how we collaborate with our labor partners and with our business partners and with our community partners? And we honestly loved that idea, and we did. So I think that's really significant content that we added to the plan. Again, not required, but we did to enrich our plan and make it more meaningful for the community. Updated information on state strategic partnerships, described initiatives to increase staff knowledge. We updated information regarding the AJCCs because, of course, we have those managed by the county, by City of Anaheim, by City of Santa Ana. Included recommendations for community input, and then once again, we updated information. So with that, that is your presentation on your 2023 modification to your PY program year 21 through 24 regional plan and 21 through 24 unified local plan. And I have used more than my allotted time, and I thank you for your patience, and I'm happy to take any questions.
And David, this went out for public comment, right?
It did. It went. Both plans went out for a 30-day public comment period, and then we had a deadline, Terry, to submit those plans without signature to the state by March 30th, so they could begin reviewing. Imagine they're getting a whole, they're getting dozens of local plans and then 15 regional plans. It's a lot of review by EDD and the state board, so that's why they asked for them earlier, and they will respond to us by June 30th.
Did we receive anything back?
No, it's a little early right now. I mean, they've had them for about 5 weeks, and they're going through them. Yeah, I have to tell you, every cycle it's a different thing. Sometimes they comment on every plan. Sometimes they comment on no plans, which has happened in the last during COVID when they were compromised, we were compromised, and there were no comments. So if we get comments back and they say, could you make an adjustment, et cetera, we will do that post-haste and get the revisions to the board. Back to your board, if they're substantive, they're not likely to be. And if they're not substantive, we'll just simply report out on, we made this change in this date, this change in this figure, et cetera. Yeah, Annalisa.
Yeah, so I realize that the plans or the planning process is in response to the state plan. My question is, I'm wondering, to what extent do the modifications or the every 4-year plan actually look back on the prior plan to determine how did we do relative to that prior plan? So execution of the plan.
That
plan was planned, but then what did we do relative to what was planned?
That is a fantastic question, and it came up in a discussion I had with another local board yesterday. Depends on the board. So the state, as much as we looked at with Francis, some monitoring issues and review issues that are open, the state doesn't monitor your plan. It's your plan. So anything that we do to move the agenda of the plan forward over that 4-year period is within the purview of your board and your leadership team. So we don't do that. If you're asking me for an opinion, I think that we should do that because I think it enriches the process. It's what's going to drive us forward in terms of our own efficiencies, on quality, our desire to move quality constantly forward. Great question.
Any other questions?
Just a couple, just suggestions. I know after this, it goes to the Board of Supervisors. A couple things, the audience for the plan, we've seen these, we've been through the process. I do think you're augmenting the PowerPoint you've done or some description. I think outside of this world, I don't think anyone knows what this means. I really don't. And so I do think it's important, if I was taking some of the board, I would say, look, some type of positioning of it, that it's as important time as any to invest or skill development in the workforce. We have, and I'd have a lot of illustrations. I'd have three areas that can people can talk to. We don't have enough skilled workers for construction right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, and second, nursing, personal care, we have a huge shortage. And so, and you have a department on aging that mm-hmm. just put out a report on the aging of Orange County. Well, I think, and this is maybe more on the department side, but I think someone that connects the dots, because no one is, that, you know, and then the third thing that they're going to be interested in, what discretion do they have? So is it, you know, the format is dictated by both federal and state, but what discretion does have Orange County? Do we have to do certain types of things? Because that's what they're going to care about. I mean, the plan.
The public, you say.
The public and, well, the board is the public. Because
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right now, I would say the visibility is job fairs.
Yeah.
And if that's the brand for this board, okay. But that really isn't what we do. And again, you know, as you're, you know, and some of it, you know, there's going to be recruitment of new board members. So soon, I think. So I think it's both getting them excited, but I don't know that it's being framed in a way for the policymakers to understand. And I think that, you know, the two things is connecting the dots that, you know, the demographics are shifting. There's already a skilled labor shortage in certain areas. I wouldn't list by the codes. And again, not that people can't read this. This is going to be a stack of 80 other items, maybe 50. So how do you kind of make that, you know, and I think, for example, half saying this is a big deal, you know, it's a huge deal. Part of it's payments, getting paid to do the work and getting hospitals. Well, they don't have enough people. You know, I think we have to personalize it. So I think you've done the job on the plan. I think we have to take it and make it a little more relevant.
Digestible.
That, yeah, and again, marketing is either fear or hope. and so I do think a little fear that if we don't invest in the future, it's going to be difficult. So, you know, and you have a lot of HR expertise around this. This is not, people are dealing with this every day, but I don't think we made it as relevant.
Right.
So the plan is fine. Yeah. And I know it's a little outside what your scope was,
right?
But it's how, you know, why do they care? And I think right now it's just kind of like, okay, it's that and job training and they'll do a fair in each district. And I think you've got a lot more than that. So that's just kind of a suggestion observation, not necessarily as part of what we do with the plan, but where it goes from here.
So one thing I would remind your board of is that apart from this federally and state required plan, your board in August of last year adopted a strategic plan for your board. We right. met in the spring, in March, and we had a strategic planning session. And then we adopted a strategic plan in August, which is intended to do, Mr. Ring, many of the things you suggested.
Right.
We created, I would say, a basic framework under that plan, but that's an opportunity for you to do many of the things I think you're suggesting.
Courtney, if I may, I just want to add, and I think this is what you're talking about. You know, if you look at Disneyland, for example, they promote, and they target, and it's always, you know, the little fairy that comes on, so you know immediately it's Disneyland. They don't have to say it's Disneyland. I think that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because even our business partners, I think in the last business meeting, we were talking about that, how we invited over 200 to participate and only about 12 of them completed, you know, this questionnaire. That's what's happening. People are not connecting the dots and they don't know who we are. So that branding is not out there yet. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That branding needs to happen urgently because there's a lot of time and momentum invested in this plan. But as everything, if it's just a plan and there's no action, there's no follow-up and follow-through, and there's no ability to actually measure our goals, then we're going to keep on doing the same repeat, right?
So yeah, and no concerns with the plan and the presentation as well as the strategic plan. Excellent documents. We did what we're supposed to do. But what they're going to want to know, for example, are we looking at AI and the impacts on the workforce in the future? Good or bad? they, you know, if we're supposed to be ahead of the curve, that's what they want to hear. But I do think humanizing it, which isn't really what you were asked to do, but really it's taking it. And it's going to be important in terms of recruiting and retaining with board members.
Well, I actually, if I may, a lot of what you're talking about is the real work of Workforce Board. So I think you'll have an opportunity to speak with Bob and Matthew in a few minutes about some of those issues. But Madam Chairman, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been a, really a true pleasure to work with your board and the other boards in the region. I couldn't have enjoyed it more. So thank you.
Thank you so much, David. Okay. And thank you for your comments.
Okay.
Very, very relevant. I think we have to find a way to make this document come to life. I think also we have to be able to navigate the WIOA law, because I know that there are some limitations in terms of us being, we can't market or promote, I guess. We can engage in outreach activities. What exactly does that mean? You know, so, you know, more work to be done on that. So again, thank you for that. Did you want to say something else?
I'm just curious to know what is the method or the process through which we're going to present it to the board? Will there be a verbal presentation, for example? What can we do? Do we want to be there? Do we want to present it in a way that helps connect
to the Board of Supervisors?
Yeah, or is it just, here's the email? How are we
to the Board of Supervisors, they're going to get it for review, and then they're going to be briefed on it with their executive assistants. So that's where they'll have that question, right? So they'll get the materials for review, and then if they have questions, they ask it. So this whole briefing that happens prior to them it going to their official approval.
Okay.
And then during their official approval, if the board member wants to speak, you could submit notice that, hey, I want to speak on this item, and then give you get up to 3 minutes.
That might be an opportunity around if that is done to perhaps have a couple of board members to help augment those staff briefings, for example, because we don't have our staff members here, so they don't know what we've been talking about for the last several years. So that's just a point of clarification. And I think, visually, people are visual, perhaps creating something that will make it come to life, like you said, but also looks at the stats, where we're going to go, if then, this is where we're going to go, if not, this is what we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to that,
yeah.
Because you have to be able to adjust.
But I think if that's formal direction or recommendation, I'd support, I think, having a couple members of leadership of the board there. And again, remember, there are, you know, that he's come on agendas with many items.
Mm-hmm.
Usually discussions can, you know, sometimes with an item's full, it's not for good reason all the time. So there's a lot of prep. People want it tight. They don't want it unraveling at the meeting. But I think it would be great for them to know here are one or two or three volunteer members giving their time. Here's why we're on the board. And here's what we're doing, because I think it's difficult for staff. I mean, I've been in that role. And again, not to do the presentation, but to show why it's important while you're giving your time.
What's the review process?
We kind of start over, but it's one process, right? So we have a staff report that goes to like say we have meetings with the board staff to review the item. So it's pretty, hopefully by the time it gets in front of them for their approval, any questions have been answered and addressed.
You know, we all have friends there too on the board of supervisors. If we just, you know, say, hey, we're on this thing, we put this together, you know, let them know that they deal with us on other issues, and let them know that, hey, here's another issue that we're involved in, because they don't know.
Yeah.
Probably all my friends on the board don't know.
Exactly.
So,
it's good to know your friends.
Yeah.
All right.
Acquaintances. Let's not get too out there.
So, Francis, maybe we can connect and have a conversation regarding next steps in terms of the timeline and, you know, when this is going in front of the board.
And this is supportive of the staff work. It's not intended to say you could. It's actually reinforced. I think right now it would be important to show that, you know, again, there's things the board could do. Maybe better for the board to do. But I do think the one message that, you know, our chair and vice chair, the fact they're volunteering their time with this schedule is just as important. That would resonate pretty well.
Good discussion. Thank you so much. All right, moving on. Next week.
You need an action.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. So do we have a motion to approve? Let's see. Let me go back through. So we're program years 2021 to 2024, Orange County Workforce Development Board. Let me read this. Recommendation, review and approve the 2023 biennial modifications to the program year 2021 to 2024, Orange County Workforce Development Board local plan and the Orange County Regional for submission to the Orange County Board of Supervisors.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion accepted. Thank you for the reminder. All right, moving on to item number 7. Today we have with us Bob Lanter. He's the executive director of the California Workforce Association, and he's going to be coming to us to talk to us about our roles and responsibilities as the Orange County Workforce Development Board, something that's very important for us to really embrace and understand so that we can be effective in our role representing the public. So with that said, Bob, welcome, and I'll pass it over to you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm thrilled to be here, and what a great discussion. It was a great setup for the presentation. Hope you had your coffee, because this is an hour presentation that I'm going to do for you in 30 minutes. So it's going to be like light speed. Luckily, I've had a lot of coffee sitting in traffic, so I'm raring to go. I want to thank Terry and Renee for bringing CWA. I also want to introduce Matthew Hayes in the back. Matthew is our program director at the association. How many of you know who California Workforce Association is? All right, great. A lot of people get us confused with the state of California. We are not the state. We are a nonprofit organization that seeks to advance local and regional job training throughout the state of California. Each one of the state's 45 workforce development boards belongs to the association. And we have a whole host of other organizations, about 80 of them, who support our mission. And they include labor, education, nonprofits, state agencies, the city of Honolulu, the city of Las Vegas, the city of Reno, anybody who shares the mission of advancing local and regional job training can belong to the association. The real role of workforce boards, spoiler alert, this is not about WIOA. That's not your role. WIOA allows the workforce board to be developed. It sets in law who sits on the board. It sets in law roles and responsibilities of the board. But workforce development is not about WIOA. Workforce development is what Mike was talking about just a few minutes ago. Workforce development is about dealing with the social economic challenges in your community and the economic opportunities. Right? So that's what we're going to talk about, because that's the real role of workforce boards. So what allows me as CWA to be the expert in what a real role of workforce board is? Well, I've been around the workforce board block once or twice. I've been doing this almost 30 years, started when I was in high school. and what I know about the workforce board, I've been able to see it from all angles. So I've been on the front line. I was a case manager in Contra Costa County in the Bay Area. I was part of the staff that wrote the first ever one-stop career center grant for the state of California, opened up one of the first AJCs in the Bay Area, developed a whole youth program, working with the refineries in the Bay Area as one of our state's first sector grantees. Did that for a while. Then I went to work and had the privilege of working for President Obama and his administration in the regional office in San Francisco, overseeing all of the Workforce Innovations Act, WIA, the precursor to WIOA, in the Western United States, particularly all the Recovery Act money that we had. So very familiar how ARPA rolled out, because we did very similar things under President Obama. And then
I consulted for a while around the country. You are one of 550 plus workforce boards in the country, 45 in the state. Those of you who are from the private sector, raise your hand. There's a few of you, all right. Are you from labor?
No.
Well, oh, you're from, okay.
I'm from the housing industry. So
perfect.
We are like pen pals with labor. We're
perfect, like, perfect.
Christmas cards every year.
So in the state of California, there's probably 800 plus business people who serve on the 45 boards. So you are among those ranks. The other half, the other 800 are public sector leadership, right? And so I've been doing this for the last 10 years going around the state of California, and I've been able to see boards that are really excelling at doing workforce development. And I've been able to see boards that are struggling to do workforce development. And I will tell you the main difference in a nutshell between those two boards is one leads with program, one leads with their program. Hey, we got this federal funding, we have a program to run, and that's what we're gonna do. They struggle. One leads with community centeredness. What does our community need? Where are the challenges? And let's go do that. They excel. And the two do connect, because once you decide what your community needs, you can use your program to support a lot of that work, not all that work. You'll have to raise some money. But boards can raise money, right? Boards, in fact, we recommend that workforce boards don't have more than 50% of their budget be WIOA funding. That means a lot of boards have, some of them in our state, up to 70% of their budget is non-WIOA funding.
I'm sorry, Bob, repeat that again.
Some boards in our state, they have a budget, up to 70% of their budget is non-WIOA funding. It's other money. It's other city money, it's other county money, it's other grant money, it's philanthropic money. Yes, they raise money to do what the community needs them to do. Because, I'm going to skip over some slides. The workforce system is a complicated system. This slide I used to present on when I worked for President Obama's administration. And the system hasn't changed so much over the years. And I know you can't read it, not important. These big orange blocks, these are federal departments, and they're all there. The Department of Agriculture, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Labor, the Department of Education. And the lighter yellowish boxes are all their programs that those departments then run, money that goes out across the country. And you can see not a lot of the lines are connected, more connected today than they were back then. But the worst part about it is the person in the middle is really confused. And this person could be business, or it can be an individual, or it can be a family, or it can be a school system. They're confused about what their role is and how to navigate the workforce system. A workforce board is not a workforce system. Workforce board doesn't even lead the workforce system. A workforce board is a partner in the workforce system. So this is a infographic of a system that I really do like, because it puts education and training in the mix. We in California train. We teach a lot of our young people to do what it takes to do their A through G requirement and get into college. But what we don't teach them is to do what it takes to be successful in the world of work. So, but the education system, make no mistake, in my opinion, needs to be part of the workforce system. Organizations that offer support services need to be part. So these are your organizations that provide housing, childcare, transportation, food stability, part of the workforce system. These are, of course, your businesses. Absolutely part of the workforce system. They're the demand side for those of you who are in business, you know, where you have supply and demand. They're the demand side of the equation. This is the workforce board. Organizations that develop workforce strategies and policies. We heard Mike say, hey, there's a shortage in personal care and nursing. Workforce boards need to be dealing with that, addressing it, talking about it. These are organizations that fund the workforce system, not just the federal government, the state, your local governments, right? Business, philanthropic. These are organizations, these are your advocates. These are people who are saying we need equity, we need job quality, we need family sustaining wages, how do we raise wages like CNAs in the state? EMTs have really low wages. It's one of the reasons why we have a shortage. And then these are your organizations that provide employment services. So this is your state EDD, the Department of Rehabilitation. It also could be your private placement services. They all come together to form a local workforce system. The key word is come together to form a workforce system. This is another example. This one I really do like. This is a picture of a sector initiative. Businesses over here, you've got your large firms, like maybe this is Disneyland, right? Which, by the way, I just heard that we're laying off people. Did you all hear that? Almost 700 people in their corporate office.
They're looking for tradespeople, though.
That's good.
They have billboards out there asking to find the
way. It's good. I know. I saw that, too. All right, so you got your, let's just say Disneyland. Then you have all your secondary and tertiary markets, all the hospitality, all the restaurants, all the supply chains, all the construction companies that support that big conglomerate, right? And over here, you have your education entities, your high school, your adult ed, community colleges, labor, apprenticeship, universities, workforce boards. They are training the workforce to go to work in a sector, in this case, hospitality and leisure. The industry will then send people back because they need new skills. Automation comes in and people need to relearn automation, right? A new technology, new equipment, changes in the labor market, and they're back and forth. Now, these folks up here, this is the workforce board, nonprofit, education, leadership. This is education doers, education leadership. And they listen to what's happening. Industry says, hey, we have new automation. We need drone pilots. Education says, wow, we don't have any drone pilot training. These folks say, hey, let's create a curriculum so that we can fill industry needs. That's a very simple sector strategy. This right here is from the San Diego Workforce Partnership, and they put the board in the middle of all of this. This is how a board kind of works. We bring money into the region. We bring the community together. I would flip these two. You bring the community together to see what they need. Then you bring money into the region. We identify the local skills gap. Maybe I'd even put this before the money. Bring the community together, identify the skills gaps, bring the money into the region. Then convene people to make sure that the programs that you're putting in place, not just WIOA, but all the programs with all the money you bring in, are meeting the people's needs and businesses' needs. And then they deliver and measure the programs. Measurement's really important because how do you know that you're actually achieving if you're not measuring? All right. Whoop. So this is out of the preamble for WIOA. They got it right in Congress. They basically said, this is a system that needs to be integrated, that's job-driven, that links diverse talent to the business needs. And it supports strong, vibrant regional economies, which we heard David say, your three boards in this region work together, right, to support people where they live and work, because regions are really important in workforce development. Why is a regional approach really important to workforce development? Anybody? What's that?
Eliminating duplication.
It eliminates duplication, absolutely.
Each region is vastly different.
Especially in a state like California, we all have local economies that are very different. And businesses, when they hire, up until COVID in particular, tried to hire from a region. If you have a business in Anaheim, they're not really... they don't really care whether an employee comes from Santa Ana, Orange County, Los Angeles. They just want a good employee, right? Good talent. So they hire regionally. Now with COVID, you know, we are able to hire everywhere remotely, although that's kind of changing now. We're hearing we need a bring back strategy and how to do that. All right, three hallmarks of WIOA. This one is probably the most important. The needs of business workers, and I need to add community, drive the solutions. The career centers, well, they are like the board's retail outlet. That's where the people come in the door. That's where, you know, the action happens with the people, the workers. And then how do those two come together to support your economy? And the thing about business I want to say is, and I always say this to those of you who are business services folks, the goal and the mission should be, we need to create a partnership with business, whether they're hiring or not. We need to create a partnership with business, even when they're not hiring. Because businesses should guide and shape regional investments to build these pipeline of skilled workers. We're doing a project in the North Central Coast right now, Santa Cruz, Monterey, San Benito County, where there's a shortage of medical assistants. And so we're convening employers who hire them, who say there's a shortage. Then we're trying to determine, well, what skill set do they need in a medical assistant and where do they get those workers? Then we went to education, primarily community colleges, but also one university and a private for-profit training provider. And we say, hey, are you teaching those skills? The answer was, yeah, kind of, yeah, sort of. Yeah, we have a capacity issue. We can't teach as much as we need. So then the workforce boards get involved and say, well, how do we build your capacity? How can we open some new cohorts? How do we really open the pipeline up, right? But business is the one who shapes that investment. And businesses can do a lot of things. That is an example of education and training curriculum development. They can also develop apprenticeship and work-based learning models, career pathway, and really bring some sector partners together. And just skip, let's talk about workforce boards. So all of you on a workforce board, this is right out of the law. All of these slides are right out of the law, by the way. Are to work in partnership with the governor and the chief local elected officials here in Orange County. You should be working in partnership with your Orange County Board of Supervisors. And also many of your mayors who are in the cities of the county to facilitate the public-private partnership. Things like ARPA money and the Infrastructure Job Act money and the CHIPS Plus Act money and the Inflation Reduction Act money all come to the county. And many workforce boards in the state receive some of that money. But if you're not developing a partnership, when the money comes, the supervisors, the elected officials, won't be looking to the board necessarily, because I heard some of you say, people don't know what we do. They think we run WIOA. But if that's all they think that you do, that's the only money you'll get. So that partnership needs to start and build, if you haven't done so already, to really inform, no, we're interested in solving your problems, elected officials, and let us help you by mobilizing business, convening partners, stakeholders, parents, teachers. Let us help you do that. And that's really about this. You're supposed to develop sector strategies and pathways that advance opportunities for all workers. Work on socioeconomic issues and the future of work, things like automation, things like when we have high wage, high paying jobs, how do people that live in your vulnerable communities actually access those high paying, high wage jobs? Are there barriers that are set up due to things like affordable housing and other stuff? We're talking more about that in a second. I'm looking at time. And foster innovation and ensuring streamlined operations. I think the Orange County Workforce Board has like a mobile training unit, am I right? That's a key innovation. Bringing training where the people live instead of having people have to go to where the training is when transportation is so, so tough in Orange County. Yes, there are the functions of a workforce board. Read it and then forget about it. Just kidding. There's a lot of them. You did some today. Local and regional planning, labor market information. You should, not that you have to develop it, but you should bring it to the board, discuss it, right? What's going on in your labor markets? Where are the jobs that are in growth mode? Where are the jobs in decline? Convening and brokering, engaging business, pathway development, looking at proven and promising practices, not only raising up your own, but seeing what others are doing out there and bringing them here. Of course, you have like, these are your program stuff, program oversight, negotiations of performers, performance, selection of one-stop operators, coordinating with education, and accessibility.
Okay. So, told you I had a lot of coffee. So what's the role of a workforce board? The picture gives you a glimpse, right? It's not a coincidence that I use a conductor. Let me take you to one of my classes that I teach at Sac State, Workforce Development 101. This is a pipeline. Job seekers and workers on one end, business and employers on the other. Supply, demand. The problem in workforce development is that even though businesses are telling us, if you convene business and you listen, they're going to tell you, those are the type of people we need with the fundamental skills. This is where we usually find people with these skills. These are the trainings that people usually go through. These are the skills we need now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now. This is how our labor markets are changing over here. And then the system really educates people, prepares people, matches them to job, and hopefully they retain in employment. The problem is all of these red arrows down below. These are holes in the pipeline. No career development, people dropping out, lack of credential rate, basic skills and efficiency, lack of employability skills, aging workforce, low wages. I just saw a stat that said, if you go to school, compulsory education, K-12, and then you go on to get your bachelor's degree and you have zero work experience, you do not do as well as somebody who goes to high school, enters an apprenticeship, works for and earns and learns, and then goes back to school to get their degree, even an AA degree. That person is doing better than somebody who goes on and just gets a bachelor's degree. Better economically. And, you know, they have skills that they can market. They're already working. They don't have debt. I also know in California, we have the nation's highest average wage of apprentice. Anybody want to take a guess at what that age is?
They're getting up to the 30.
Yeah, 33 years old, the highest in the nation.
It was 19 when I
yes, started. And it keeps inching up. When I started this, it was 27, 10 years ago. And we also have the highest average time between a high school graduate and somebody entering a career pathway job, a job that has pathways to economic self-sufficiency. That average age is 7 years between high school graduation and the time they enter a career pathway job. That's all graduates, not just those that are struggling or working, but all graduates. And I have two of them living with me right now. So I know it's true.
Is there a state that has the least amount of that gap?
There are a lot of states. Oh, the least amount of that gap. Yes, states like Colorado, states like North Carolina, states like Indiana, all have a much lower gap. But one thing that those states have been doing for about the last 6-7 years is high school apprenticeship. You know, and really, we are doing a lot in California around CTE, but the challenge for us is real connection to a workforce. Real connection to jobs. The apprenticeship allows a high school student to actually be connected to an employer in a real way, where an employer is investing in that student and vice versa, as opposed to an internship. Like my son just finished internship. It was unpaid. It was through the college. So there was no investment, really deep investment on the part of the employer to keep him when he was done.
Yeah. And if I may, I just participated in exit interviews. I don't know if any of you have participated, please do. And one of the biggest things that we saw is that the students who actually did or connected with a company and did an internship during their high school years were offered a job. So all of them came up with a resume and had the opportunity to go into that job, even if it was, you know, like the first experience that they will have. Connected to the training that they had at high school in person.
So it's so helpful.
The model that we use today is companies either want to use the education system, they don't want to invest themselves. So I'm with the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We, the members and the contractors, we have an hourly rate that goes into our apprenticeship. As far as I know, the construction apprenticeships are the only group that are investing in their future. Yeah. I don't see that from the nurses, the bankers, the engineers.
Firefighters do.
Firefighters do.
Yeah, yeah. They're the only two. And if you go, Doug, and I'll be fortunate enough to return back to Switzerland, I was able to study apprenticeship in the European nations in 2018. I'm going next month again to further those studies. There, in the European nation, employers invest heavily in their young people, in their workforce, and 70% of students go into an apprenticeship.
And I have to say that most of them were doing internships with Kaiser. So that's why they connected.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a look. So how do we do all this that we're talking about? And how do you connect that strategic plan that you guys just approved to the real work that you should be doing? All right. So you are the experts. You and your colleagues, not on this board, are the experts in workforce development. You're appointed to this body because you represent leadership in Orange County, either from private sector or public sector, that are experts in workforce development. And this is right out of the law. This is what the law says should be appointed to a local workforce board. So Matthew and I, what we do when we do this training, we spend some time and we do some research on what are some economic opportunities and social economic challenges in the local area that we're talking to. And even though this was developed a couple of months back, because we were going to do this training in March of this year for all of you, these are still very relevant and valid. So these are some Orange County economic opportunities. The jobs continue to grow, particularly in certain areas of your community: trade transportation, leisure hospitality, manufacturing, and education. 70,000 jobs year over year in education and health services, leisure and hospitality. We also heard that we can't find enough healthcare workers. But we're gonna get back to that in a second. The CEO Leadership Alliance, you have this organization here in Orange County, is committed to growing talent pipelines in Orange County. And they actually have a program through the CEO Leadership Alliance to do career exploration, Orange County Fellows, SoCal Master Fund, ecosystem events. Are you all familiar with the CEO Alliance?
Yes.
Yes, this board should be partners with the CEO Alliance, right? Key industry drivers, these are some of your key industries. I know that you have a strategic plan with industry sectors. Many of them are located here, right? Energy, utilities, IT, hospitality, healthcare, manufacturing, transportation. The UI rate is 3% now, so it's ticked up a little bit since the end of the year, but 3% is so good. Why is that unemployment rate a key indicator of economic opportunity? 3%. It means that businesses are having trouble finding people to go to work. It means that if you're able to go to work and you don't have any barriers, you might have a good shot at finding a job. It also means that employers are being a little bit more flexible in who they're bringing on, because they're having trouble finding people. So that means individuals with disabilities, individuals who are maybe formerly incarcerated, individuals where English isn't their first language, may now be given shots to get hired when the unemployment rate's higher, where they may not. You have a lot of colleges here, really good colleges in Orange County. That's an economic opportunity. Those colleges should be brought to the table. What are you working on? What's industry telling you? What are the key programs you're running? The graduation rate is 94%. That's really good. You got a lot of people graduating high school. It's one of the tops in the state. Over $600 million received in ARPA funding. Now, why did I put that up there? That money needs to be obligated by the end of December 2024. Most counties and cities are struggling to obligate their money. Might be a good time to knock on the supervisor's door or somebody who has the accounting for that and say, hey, are you having trouble spending some of that money? We can help you spend it. And if you're looking for examples of how a workforce board can help spend that money, come see me afterwards. I'll put you in touch with some of your colleagues around the state that are doing really incredible programmatic things with that money. And 56% of your population have advanced degrees. Again,
really strong number when you compare it across the state. So there's a lot of great economic opportunities here. You've got a highly educated workforce, you got key industry sectors, got lots of education, got some job growth, got some money, got some CEOs ready to go and help you. But you also have some really significant challenges to deal with. Only 29% of first-time homebuyers can afford an entry-level home in Orange County. That's down from 41% in 2020. The median home price, look, I just moved to Orange County from the Bay Area. And I look, I've lived in the Bay Area all my life. When I saw that the median home price was 1.2, I'm thinking about maybe I chose the wrong county to live in. So this is a big problem for a lot of your low and median wage earners. Rent is high in this county, right? Layoffs, there's a lot of layoffs since July, tax, finance, medical manufacturing, mortgage companies. 28.5% of part-time workers in this county live below poverty. So how do you get those part-time workers maybe to full-time employment? Population's getting older. The only age group that has a growth trend is 65 plus in this county. What does that say? Where are young people going? It might be attributable to this box over here, right? People of color are the majority in the county, but face disproportionate levels of poverty, educational attainment, barriers to equitable civic engagement. Unemployment rate, African-American is 8%, Latino 5%. That's much higher than your UI rate. 319,000 people live at or below poverty in Orange County. 319,000. That's two or three big cities worth. As a workforce board, that's something you should be concerned about, right? And the fastest growing industry is hospitality and leisure. That's great. The wages, not so great, right? Jeez, Bob, thanks for the uplifting presentation. But the idea really is, okay, you know that there are opportunities. You know there are challenges, right? These are some things you should also consider when you're thinking about the opportunities and challenges. It's just things like, how are we intentional to break cycles of inequity and racism in labor markets so that we uplift the people of color, right? How do we do job creation strategies like apprenticeship and work experience, entrepreneurship training? How do we move some of those part-time people into full-time employment? How do we show the impact beyond WIOA? Because frankly, the community, when you look at WIOA performance measures, they really don't tell them a whole lot. So how do you tell the community what the board is worried about, what the board is working on and making progress towards? And the first one is really, how do you bring in some other money to allow you to be more flexible? Because WIOA is hard money. It's hard money to do a lot of this work. All right, I'm almost done. So here's what I would say. What we suggest is that the board do some strategic planning, which sounds like you guys have done already, but that you do a little bit more further work and you do some action plan. And that you take that strategic plan and then that other strategic plan, you know, the one that goes to the state and then the one that you did last spring, and then you call that down even further to, hey, what are three big areas? I think Mike said this earlier. He was like doing my presentation for me. What are three big areas we want to dive into and work on that people care about in this community, that your elected officials care about, that education care about, that business cares about, that your residents care about? And then think about those issues and develop some strategies. And it can be anything like, hey, there's a 150-acre commercial development going on down the street by an aerospace company. Let's connect with them and see what jobs they're doing, see how many people we can get into those jobs. I mean, something as simple as that. Or it can be really big, like, hey, let's see if we can help shore up the personal care occupational shortage that we have, right?
But those are the things, when you report them out to the community, people will understand. And they'll go, hey, that workforce board is really doing something valuable for Orange County. And we always recommend that you do that in an action plan. You know, over like 12 to 24 months. Those three things. And that action plan, you look at and you modify regularly through staff monthly or through the board and at the board level quarterly. That you tie into specific deliverables that they get worked on at committee level, and then help keep the board on track. And I'm going to wrap this up. I gave you a lot of examples, but we're up against the clock. You are the experts in the room. That's what I have there, experts in the room. If I went around this room, I could bet each of you would be able to name one economic opportunity just by virtue of living and working in this community and then being on this board. I also would think that you guys could name a social economic challenge, right? Well, what we do with boards, and we've been blessed to have a grant with the Irvine Foundation, is we will actually come help you take all those ideas, put them on the table, organize them, prioritize them, and have you choose 3 to 5 of them to work on over the next 2 years. We call it our action planning session. It's not very, there's no really specific highfalutin name. It's just real role action planning. We can do that, and then we can help you by shepherding you through the next 18 months on moving that action plan forward. We don't have to do that. We still have room for, I think, one or two more boards. I know Matthew, we have a 10 o'clock meeting, so he left the building. He would know how many more boards. And I think we're counting Orange County as a possible in already that group. So you don't have to worry about being one of the last two, because I think you're in actually the 6 we have already. But we're happy to help. I'm a local resident, so it's easy for me. Well, the traffic was really... I hit Orange Crush in full effect today. Usually I'm going the other way. Yes,
Anna. I just have a question regarding the strategy and structure going together. So can you talk a little bit about how the structure of different boards have the opportunity to go to conferences, knowing that there are different structures in different areas? How does that impact the strategy, if at all? Meaning, I like to know that there are other sources of funding. Personally, just sat down with one of our supervisors 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I do recognize that they had a binder full of stuff. So we've got to be able to connect quickly. But the money part is the part that help us potentially access a little bit more opportunity. But how do we do that given the structure of the town?
Yeah.
Is there something that would limit us from doing so?
Yeah.
A lot of questions, but I'm asking.
Yes, on all of that. So, yes, 45 boards in the state. They all, there are some similarities among them, but a lot of them have different structures. So there are a lot of boards who are county-based, like Orange County, right? However, within the county-based boards, where the board sits is different from county to county. Some sit in the Employment and Service Department. Others, like here in the Community Development Department, am I right on that?
Resources.
Community Resource Department. Others in Economic Development, right? So they sit in different departments. Others in the CEO's office. So then we have boards that are city-based, like Santa Ana and Anaheim. Then we have boards that are JPAs, you know, between counties and or cities. How does that affect their ability? It definitely does, but it doesn't mean that there isn't a path to being more flexible. So for example, the Tulare County Workforce Board in a county has opened up a 501c3 with the blessing of county leadership to be able to accept additional funding. Because there were some challenges accepting funding into the county, right? Other counties don't seem to have that problem where they actually are able to bring in grant money. But I wouldn't know, Anna, until we start looking at the structure and the possibility of the bank account, those kind of things. But it definitely can be something to work on in terms of, are we as flexible as we could be? Do we have the relationships that we need to have in terms of with the elected officials? In other counties, they may be not a grant lead, but a grant partner. So somebody else writes the grant, somebody else is a fiscal agent, and they subcontract to the board. That's another way to get things done. So that's a very short answer to a very complicated question, but it is definitely something that you should be looking at if you want to be flexible and nimble. And that is, you know, can we bring in more money? Who gets to decide? Where does that money go? What purview over that money does this board have? Those kind of things are all in play.
Yeah, and just want to underscore the need for that conversation, because I think I'm sort of feeling somewhat constrained in terms of our ability to do certain things within the WIOA, law frame that we have here. So a conversation that I'd like to have, but I'm sure you've had a chance also to study our board and how we interact with the county. We've had previous conversations regarding establishing an MOU, and I wanted to get your take on that in terms of how helpful you think that might be and what's involved in order for us to develop that level of understanding between us and the Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm. Before I answer that, let me just say that the federal government, under our former Secretary of Labor, Julie Sue, who is now the acting Secretary of Labor in Washington, D.C., has a campaign called Yes, We Owe a Can, right?
Yeah.
And it's really kind of hokey. I don't like Yes, We Owe a Can. But what they're trying to say, she always tells me, like, Bob, I want you to say it. And I'm like, it's just so hokey, Julie. But what they mean is there's a lot more flexibility in the law that people realize. The challenge with it is your compliance officers, your accountants, you know, the policy people often will first say no, right? But there's some more flexibility than meets the eye. So I just want to put that. Now, your answer to your question. A workforce board, local elected official agreement with LEO agreement is a common document that many boards put in place. The reason they put it in place is this board only exists if the Board of Supervisors accepts the money. The Board of Supervisors is the grant recipient. It's always the chief local elected official. They have all the responsibility and liability of that funds, but they cannot get rid of those funds. They cannot take those funds unless they have a board. And they cannot get rid of the board unless they get rid of the funds. It's like one of the only advisory boards that can't just be disbanded. It can be disbanded, but then they got to get the money back, right? You want the money, you got to have a board. So because of that, many boards are connected. Like if you look at org charts, the board is connected to the supervisors. The staff falls under county staffing charts, right? And there's a dotted line between the board and the staff sometimes. But the board wants to have a clear document that outlines roles and responsibilities. Here's what we do. Here's our role and responsibility vis-a-vis the elected officials. Here's what you do. Here's how we work the budget. Here's how we manage staff. So when I was an executive director in Contra Costa County, when I was running that board, I answered to the EHSD, the Employment and Human Service Department director, who sat on my board. So you can see the funkiness about that, right? Even though he hired me, the executive committee of the board wanted the ability to ensure that if there was any disciplinary action, they got to weigh in heavily. Because I didn't, I reported to him in terms of a county employee, but I reported to them in terms of the workforce board. So we had to lay that out in an agreement about what is the purview over my job as the executive director in terms of the board. And there are a lot of other things that boards put in those agreements. And it's just a healthy document to outline roles and responsibilities, and then any mediation processes in case you need to. And I think I sent examples, but I can resend them to Renee and to you if you need it.
And would that be something you could assist us with in the action if you were to assist us with the action planning part of this?
Yes, I could. Although at that point, there's those documents are typically legal, and so you'll need some legal help. I'm not an attorney,
okay.
but we can find one, and I'm sure you have county counsel, and so. But I could definitely help.
Sure.
All right. I know we're up against the clock. Any other questions? I'm sorry it was so fast.
For the chair, you know, as we were talking about different structures, different way to leverage funds. You know, and again, I think San Diego is an interesting model. It's always been. They have the more independent. Here, I think the reality of the discussion would really need to probably include OCBC and United Way, because all three entities are going after workforce related funding. I think, you know, in the case I'm on the United Way board and one member of OCBC. So, but I don't think we all talk about collaboration, and it's not uncommon to have someone else be the lead on a grant and someone partner for non, you know, so but that conversation, given the unique situation Orange County, you know, they both have people looking for funding opportunities day and night, although I think OCBC now would be a good time to engage in the conversation. I know we have a member on the board.
But and they have the SURF, they got the SURF grant, which some of us in here are involved in that.
Right, but we're obligated to support that too. But they're not, the SURF grant is much more delegated out to others. So it doesn't mean we shouldn't know what's going on with it. But
And I think that this board, this workforce board applied for that too, but it doesn't mean that someone should be representing this board sitting on that, because there's 80 different groups and people on that
right
thing, and there's no reason that the workforce board couldn't have a representative.
Yeah, and let me just say, I know those organizations, and you're absolutely right, Mike. Conversations need to be had, because what you want to work towards is cooperation, not co-opetition,
right?
And a lot of times I see a lot of competition for the dollars, where cooperation would make more sense.
Yeah.
But it's not, that doesn't happen just in Orange County, it happens all over. Yes.
And I would include probably the CEO Alliance in that discussion as well.
Yeah, because I think that would be the right conversation, not a chart where we just go to a 501c3 or something, you know, which some people do. I think there is a way to do it, but I think right now, if you can harness that collective energy, because we do things they don't want to do,
right?
Or can't do. So anyway,
and again, a 501c3 is not an easy thing to establish in the county structure. So you know, it is an option, but it may not be the first option or the best option. So all options should be explored.
So Chair, if we were to take up the conversation further around the action plan, what will that take action on that action
plan? I'm looking to Francis for some guidance there.
We'll be in touch with Bob on the action plan.
Okay. Thanks, Francis.
Yes.
Yeah, I need to.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much. Have a great rest of your week.
And then, was there an update on the reappointment process? I didn't mean to interrupt, but.
Well, currently the application's been submitted, and we're waiting for supervisors.
Okay. Because many of us stepped up to do it indefinite period, just so you had a board.
Right.
Yeah. But I know there'll probably be another recruitment process after that.
Yeah.
Okay. So if it'd be good for us to know, because we all have to manage our conflicts in time.
Yeah. So maybe it might be helpful, Francis, if you send out an update and.
Yeah. But like as soon as we head back.
Okay.
Yeah. Or you know, Renee, whatever you decide. But I think the people, some people who aren't here said, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Okay. I believe we've covered all items. We do have open discussion. Is there any questions, any comments, anything that anyone would like to share at this point? Yes.
Not comments, but just a question of where the funders are coming from.
Let's see. Francis or Renee, can you respond to that?
We're doing the county's doing a full recruitment, but they haven't released the recruitment yet because they're obviously identifying the job description, but the intent is still full recruitment. The process will likely take some time. It's not going to be a quick fill.
It took a long time to get Carmel with us.
Yeah, I believe last time it was 3 rounds of recruitment to fill a position. Hopefully it's going to be a little bit more expedited this time, but we don't think it's going to apply, right? And then they have to go through the vetting process and be processed just like any other kind of position. But it is towards the top of the priority list as far as filling. Like, we have a priority list for all vacant positions, and that was the top, so it was a priority for the county. But,
that would be like, because Terry and I had a sidebar in DC with Contra Costa. It's kind of interesting that they were talking about that. And the challenge is that counties face in replacing staff and the amount of time that it takes them to do it. And then
6 to 8 months, I think.
9 was in their case.
Yeah, 9
And then, and on top of that, then they have unspent projects, for their grant. That's okay. So I just know what a challenge that is.
Right.
How that can even trickle down to even further dollar challenges. Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah. Okay. If there are no other questions or comments, I'd like to adjourn the meeting. Thank you for your time today. And we'll talk again.